had a really rough time. And I thought I was going to write the whole book about her. But then as I started to get into it, I realized it was about a lot more than just that. So, yeah.
Thank you.
I think we have time for one more question.
Hi. Ashley Elizabeth, you had mentioned one of your goals was to cultivate a deep listening. And I think thanks to this session today that all of us have cultivated some deep listening awareness. So thank you. But my question is, going back to social media, which was discussed very briefly at the beginning, you know, I think we are all very shocked, and it's amazing that you have the discipline to remove yourself from social media, and I'm sure that wasn't easy over time, but you've all said that, you know, during a vulnerable period that you just remove yourself essentially from social media. So as someone that uses social media, not a lot, because I'm always concerned about what I post. So are there, you know, and I'm not sure that the word trigger is the right word, but are there triggers, or conversely, are there, you know, healthy engagements that you look forward to seeing on social media? So either or, you know, I'm just interested to hear, are there things that, you know, that you look forward to seeing and things that you are, you know, you shut her down basically when you see it?
Oh, goodness. I think I enjoy checking in on my friends, and especially the writing community that I've cultivated over years, especially we don't live close together. I love to see their lives and what they're doing or what they're presenting, and I know social media, it's not always 100%, you know, what's going on in your life, but I find that connection important in that community, and you know, I have that community face-to-face in Kingston, but I also have a lot of loved ones that I don't live near. So I just try to focus on that, I think, and I try to pull away from all the random accounts that I follow and magazines and things like that, and I focus on the people that I love and that I want to show up for. Social media can be great because if someone's in distress or has a really positive thing happening in their life, that's usually where it's posted, so I can engage with it there and celebrate them or offer assistance if needed. So
yeah, I don't think I would have become a writer if it hadn't been for social media, because that's how I was writing on Blogspot. Does anyone remember Blogspot? And then I like met all these people on Twitter, and we started kind of like sharing our blogs with each other, and then somebody reached out and said, do you want to start writing for a magazine? And that's how I started actually writing for money. So I have to thank social media for that. I think these days I try to stay away from the more toxic ones, which we know which those are, and Substack has now become my more favorite place to be, because I get to find incredible writers and read their work, and my feed that they have is just people sharing their work, and so I don't know, it just makes me happy, and so I spend more time there than other places. So yeah, thanks for the question.
I still find lots of meaningful engagement around activism, which I find really great. I've been involved in some activism around female genital cutting, and that's a global issue, and that's Twitter has been an amazing place to connect with global activists. On the other hand, there can be a lot of trolls, there can be a lot of people who are reactive around social change, I could say. So that's also a hardship that comes.
Okay. Thank you all very much for being such a great audience. Thank you a lot for being three wonderful people to speak to. I have thoroughly enjoyed this. I strongly recommend the books. There is a tremendous amount in each one of them. Thank you.
Thank you, Mike.
Brilliant conversation, and thank you all three for being here with Mike for the combo. Shall we give some free books away? We have Trish Krause, Shannon Collins, and Catherine Hatch are our winners. If you could join me at the podium before you leave, that would be great. If you've liked the event today, I would draw your attention. There's
two events in particular, Perfection, Love, and Ruin, which is also a poetry-based event that's coming up this afternoon. And then tonight we have Carol Off joining us for The Big Idea, which is the future of democracy. So it's going to be quite a conversation. The event is technically sold out. However, I would encourage you to rush the event. We have pass holders at the festival, and almost always, not all of them will show up. So we usually have a few free seat or few empty seats when the event gets started. So I do encourage you, if you want to go to The Big Idea, to rush the event, or you can buy a ticket, pay what you can afford on our website to access the live stream for that tonight. And then our marquee evening event is up at the Mansion this evening with the Stephen Hyten happening. So hopefully there will be a trolley also going from here up to the Mansion, so you don't have to walk. It's a little further from our little cluster of downtown core. So we hope you'll join us at one of those events coming up as well. So thank you all for being here.
And from a 2024's Kingston Writers Fest event, you heard writers Ashley Elizabeth Best, Farzana Doctor, and Misty Pratt. Again, that was held on September 28th in an event called Making Care Better, Taking Better Care. And as mentioned ahead of this, airing that event and conversation, as you can tell, ran a few minutes over the hour, but I aired it uninterrupted. It is getting close to 7 minutes after 5 o'clock. You are and have been listening to Finding a Voice here on CFRC 101.9 FM. We are located in Lower Carruthers Hall, Queen's University, Kingston, Ontario. My name is Bruce. I'm here every Friday afternoon from 4 to 6 o'clock. And I mentioned it at the top of the first hour, but again, just a reminder that every week, both hours of this show are uploaded to my personal blog space for it at Finding a Voice on cfrcfm.wordpress.com. Those remain for at least 3 years, and I usually try to get that all uploaded by about 7 o'clock, usually about the time I can get home and get in a position to do that. So a short mention as well. I recorded, I believe, about a dozen events. There might be even a couple over that at Kingston Writers Fest this past fall that have not aired yet here. This is the time of year I usually do that. And the first week was actually last week that I began this. So now on and off, I guess, over the course of the next several weeks, I'll be bringing more of that event here. And in case you haven't heard, this was the final year, as we know it, for Kingston Writers Fest. This is kind of in memoriam, I guess. So before we move on, I would like to extend my heartfelt thanks to all of you for having tuned in to this first hour. An equal thanks to Kingston Writers Fest, their staff and volunteers, to the writers in that event you just heard, and all involved in running such a wonderful series of events for all of their work. And also, briefly coming up in this hour, I'll be airing an interview and sharing some information. But before we do that, you know what? It's probably about the time that I really need to do this. So let's do this first, and I'll be right back.
Two out of three geese. Six out of seven seagulls. And this Transylvanian owl all agree that if they had their own radios, they would tune in to CFRC 101.9 FM. Broadcasting just for you from Kingston, Ontario, Canada.
Our house is a very, very, very fine house.
Late in the 1970s, four Kingston women got together to discuss the idea of creating a community house, a place where grassroots organizations, families, and groups could gather. a place where food could be prepared and shared, new skills could be learned, and lively discussion could be encouraged. For over 30 years, Kingston Community House has provided low-cost meeting space for hundreds of groups, allowing people to come together to learn from one another, share resources, and trade skills. As it becomes safe once again to gather in person, we look forward to providing the Kingston community with a comfortable and convenient place to reconnect with one another. Located in downtown Kingston, we operate 7 days a week. For more information on Kingston Community House and how to book, please visit kingstoncommunityhouse.org.
Folk Everything is your passport to the finest in folk music. Old, new, and everything in between. The wonderful, the wild, and the weird.
Walk quietly by, he won't bother you. He's a busy man, he's got things to do.
It's all here Saturdays from 10 a.m. until 1 p.m. Folk Everything with Hugh on CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston.
And welcome back now as we move, I guess, more officially into this second hour. It is 11 minutes after 5 o'clock. And again, you are listening to Finding a Voice here on CFRC 101.9 FM. Again, we are located in Lower Carruthers Hall, Queen's University, Kingston, Ontario. My name is Bruce. I'm here every Friday afternoon from 4 to 6 o'clock. We do stream live online as well at www.cfrc.ca. And coming up next, you're going to hear from a telephoned interview I did with Toronto area poet Patrick Connors. It goes by Pat Connors with his 2024 collection of poems called The Long Defeat. I'm going to air that interview now. I will also let you know that coming up after that, I'm going to air a list of some upcoming, mostly local Kingston events. I think they all are, in fact, but also maybe two or three calls for submissions that are more general and that might apply to more globally than the events themselves. But I'm going to do that. I'm also going to have a little bit extra time today, so I'm going to play a couple of songs. So that's a bit different. So tell you what, let's go ahead and move into this. Here is the telephone interview. I believe it was the last week in October last year, so my apologies. It's been a while to get this on the air. But this is a telephone interview I did with Toronto poet Pat Connors about his 2024 collection of poems called The Long Defeat. Here we go. Hi, Pat.
Hey, Bruce. How are you today?
I'm great, thanks. This is a beautiful afternoon, eh?
It is. A wonderful fall afternoon.
Yeah, perfect. And for those of you out there, I'm speaking with Pat Connors, who just, I think this spring, right? Your latest book of poetry called The Long Defeat came out, and we're going to talk a little bit about that and a little bit about poetry. And he's selected a few poems to share with us this afternoon. So I'm looking forward to that.
Me too. Thank you so much for doing this, Bruce.
Okay. And a lot of times I'll go chronologically and go backwards first, but I think I'm just going to jump into the book first.
Great.
I think if I counted right, The Long Defeat had 16 observations, let's call them that. You could call them blurbs. You could call them short synopses of the book that you must have sent out to 16 people commented some wonderful comments about the work, and that they had high praise for it.
And just to get those kinds of comments from poets of that caliber, whether it's Alan Breezemaster or Dane Swan, or you know, there's some incredible poets and great human beings that responded genuinely to my work and to what I was offering them. It was very meaningful. It really made the whole thing worthwhile.
That's a beautiful thing, and it's for
people to take the time and comment, to not only offer to do it, but to actually do it and get it back to you, has to mean that the book did indeed mean something to them.
I'm hoping so, because The Long Defeat is kind of my response to what we've all been going through, like as a society, even going before 2020. I mean, certainly the pandemic and things like that, but just, you know, life has been a lot more challenging. There's, you know, the cost of living is that much more expensive, and there's, you know, so much sort of confrontation between people who, you know, okay, people have different viewpoints and everything else, but I mean, we're supposed to be able to have an informed debate. There's not informed debates going on right now, and Canada is guilty of it too.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. I will just kind of drift back and mention, though, that, and it also ties directly into what you're saying too, though, I think, is that those who talked about your book describe your work as not only being wonderful, but also seeming to embrace both loss, but also indeed hopefulness as well.
I think that my work has always been hopeful and positive by nature. I've felt it very necessary to actually explore the other side of that in this book, because it has been challenging what we've been going through, and it's not over yet. I mean, there's still people getting COVID, and, you know, the cost of housing continues to go up, even though the bubble has apparently burst. And, you know, we're still going through it, so I'm focusing on what we're going through as much as the happy ending in this, but certainly the happy ending is very important to me.
Yeah, that's wonderful. And I believe a number of these poems, as you mentioned, were written during that first couple of years of the pandemic. A number of them as well have appeared in other anthologies and things. How did you coalesce? How did you select what you wanted to include in this book?
Well, the sort of the framework of this book did come out during the early parts of the pandemic. I got laid off. I mean, I have a commission sales job. We weren't making any money. They had to lay some people off, and I was one of the unlucky ones. But I took that as an opportunity to do a lot of soul searching and try to articulate what I was going through, but not just to make it a personal thing, to make it a universal thing. And that led to the chapbook, Worth the Wait, which came out with Cactus Press last year. But that's also very much the framework of this book, and everything that I wrote was, even after that, was as a continuation of that saga of what we've all been going through. And yeah, as you mentioned, I mean, it had some success with it. I'm have some poems there. You honored me by putting three of my poems in More Than a Gathering, and I'm really looking forward to coming back to Kingston and sharing those poems with everybody again at ArtsFest.
Yeah, and I'm looking forward to having you again next year, so that'll be wonderful. And it was unfortunate that you couldn't make it this year.
Well, it's been challenging. I mean, as I say, I have a commission sales job, and sales have not particularly been this year either. I'm holding my head above water in terms of what my work is perceiving of me, but you know, there's been less travel for poetry. There's been, you know, less splurging on different things that I would ordinarily be able to do. Most of my problems are the epitome of first world problems, but I mean, this has been part of my reality this year for sure.
Yeah. Well, I love the book. I've read the book. I love the book. It makes some poets or authors or people, some people kind of not want to hear it, but I have even ear tagged a few poems that I really love in here. But yeah, people don't like it if you desecrate a book by ear tagging it, but I do that, so I have to confess.
Well, you know, that's part of being an honest reviewer of a book. and part of having the integrity that your radio show brings to literature.
Well, thank you. I'm going to, maybe at the very end of this interview, we might come back to the book again, but and I know we will indirectly, but I thought maybe I'd ask you a few questions about writing and things like that.
Absolutely. Please do.
Okay. Let's just say, I'm just going to throw this out there, if someone came up to you and simply asked you why you write poetry, what would you say?
Poetry is my my way of expressing myself, my way of adding to a conversation, not just in the world of arts and literature, which is profoundly important to me, but also in foreign political discourse, religious and spiritual, and just in terms of how everyday, but also in terms of everyday people, not necessarily, you know, highbrow type of things, but how everyday people are responding to the world that's around them. And I just want my poetry to lend itself to these different conversations.
Oh, wonderful. And this one deals more with the creative process itself. As far as a writing space, do you prefer it to, when you sit down to write, to be more of a private and silent space? Or do you prefer, say, an open space, something like even like a cafe, or even something not quite so spot on, but like just a well-traveled courtyard, a park, or something, a populous place?
Absolutely. I've had plenty of success writing first drafts on parks, in parks and in cafes, and on the bus even. I'm a public transit person, and I get a lot of my deep thinking and reading and early drafts of poems done on the bus. But today I'm going to the library, and I'm going to get through some early drafts of a couple of poems there. Yeah, some of my best writing comes at between 11 o'clock at night and 1 o'clock in the morning. when part of me would rather be sleeping, but I just have that urge that I have to create. I have to get something out there.
Ah, that's cool. I think you might have sort of touched on another question I was going to ask, but I'm still going to ask it anyway. Do you have any daily rituals or habits or times of day? You kind of mentioned you can go all over the day, but do you like devote a certain, say, portion of a day to ahead of time to specifically writing, or is it more like just spontaneous?
It's very spontaneous. There's no question I need to develop more of a routine and to have a set time and a set space where I do a lot of these things. But I have a day job that at the end of the day, I sometimes don't have any energy to do it. And when I get up in the morning, I need time to sort of, you know, get my bearings about me and get myself ready to, you know, to be a contributing member of society and to keep a stiff upper lip sometimes. So, my creative process is often very spontaneous, or it's the result of contemplation that leads to that sort of spark of spontaneity of creativity.
Oh, cool. That's perfect. Do you, or have you in the past had any authors or poets who you might describe as being influential or encouraging or anything like that?
Well, there's the old saying, and I guess it applies more to sports or to actors or rock stars or whatever, don't meet your heroes. But I've been very charmed as I've gotten more and more on my poetic journey. I've gotten to know people like Mick Burrs and Robert Priest, whose work I've admired for so long, and James Neal, and all of these people have done things for me and have collaborated with me on different projects and on doing readings together, and it's just become another part of that communication, of that discourse, and it's made my poetry better, but especially I think it's made me a better human being too.
Oh, that's wonderful. That's very high praise for those people, and we're happy. We should all be happy that they touched and affected your writing, because I really do love this book. And
thank you.
You mentioned at least one other publication, but you have been published in the past. Would you like to share that too?
I'm sorry.
You've been published before too. Did you want to mention your previous publication?
The Long Defeat is my second collection with Mosaic Press. My first one, The Other Life, came out during the pandemic, and I had two chapbooks with Luciano Iacobelli's wonderful Lyrical Miracle Press, Scarborough Songs, and Partonic Contemplative, which kind of is a humorous, tongue-in-cheek look at my artistic process, because, you know, I don't do enough of a set routine for my art, but, you know, when I do, then, you know, I get the things done. And I had the wonderful honor of going to Hibara, Cuba, with Richard and Kimberly Grove. God rest her soul, Kim just passed.
And, yeah, so sorry. You know, I'm sorry to hear
that. Canada-Cuba Literary Alliance, and having a 17 poems in the bottom of the wine jar, which was with Sand Crab Press.
That's wonderful. That's a lot. You've been out there for a while.
I have. It took me a while, but yeah, now all of a sudden it's like, hey, I actually kind of have a body of work now.
That's incredible. Yes. And is there anything else you wanted to mention about the book? Like, how can people... You know what? I'm going to ask it as a more general question. If anyone out there wanted to reach you or were interested about your poetry or even writing or any of your other work, this one included, where could they look? Do you have an email, blog space, Instagram?
I'm very findable on social media. Let's see here. I'm gonna pull up my three IDs here. My Facebook ID, my Twitter ID, and my Instagram ID. And I invite people to reach out and be a part of the conversation. Ask me any questions they want to ask. See if there's anything they want to attend at any of the events I put on in Toronto. So on Facebook, my ID is patrick.j.connors.3. So apparently I'm not the only Patrick J. Connors.
Apparently.
And then on Instagram, it's patjtconnors. And on Twitter, it's 81912con, because those are the call letters for me in the Dewey Decimal System in the Toronto Public Library System.
Perfect. And I don't have Instagram. I don't have any of those other things, but I do have you on Facebook. And you've
Absolutely.
Just been all over. You've been all over Facebook. Every time I turn around, you're doing another reading. You did one just earlier this week. Lisa Reynolds.
Part of a wonderful event in Whitby, Ontario, which
yeah.
is about 20-25 minutes down the highway east of Toronto, at a beautiful space called the Station Gallery,
yeah.
converted train station that has very, very commendable artworks in it. And I got to meet Frances Boyle and read with her, as well as Rayanne Haynes, who is a fine poet, along with being the president of the League of Canadian Poets, Carolyn Vandermeer, and Rico Satoski, who was the poet laureate of Owen Sound. I had had the honor of meeting him once before, but I met those three ladies for the first time, as well as my fellow Newfie Patrick Mead, who is a famous local figure in Whitby and throughout Durham region.
That's really cool. I'm going to be reading with Carolyn on Tuesday, the
Wonderful.
12th of November in Ottawa, and you are
good,
going
yes.
to be reading
I am
in
reading
Ottawa.
At Daniel's Tale Bookstore on the next day on the 13th. I'm definitely going to try and meet with you on the 12th.
Oh, that
we'll
would
see
be
how
great.
That works out, because, you know, I'm just coming in that day, like
yeah.
you, it's a whirlwind tour. But I am reading at the Spaniel's Tale on the 13th with Frances Boyle, as well as our old friend Colin Morton. And it's going to be a wonderful reading, and I hope that people in Ottawa come and check us out.
Oh, I hope so, too. And unfortunately, I don't know if this will get to air before that happens, but if it does,
understandable,
then...
Understandable. There's so many great things, and, I mean, you've always given such great airtime to put the Poets at Art Fest that I know, because I've had the honor of being replayed on Poets of Art Fest close to 10 times now, and it's great exposure that you're providing for all of us.
Well, thank you. You're very kind. But all the poets deserve it, that's for sure. And did you have anything else you wanted to say about the book or poetry? Because I'd like to hear some of your readings, but I want to give you that opportunity first.
Absolutely. I mean, this is some of the darkest stuff that I've ever written. There's a lot of difficult topics in there. But the thing is that I do ultimately believe in the happy ending, where I would try and incorporate that in within the body of an individual poem. I realize that that's very trite. I have realized that that can be very trite, especially while the whole world is suffering as much as it is. But I do believe that we are going to come out of this, and we are going to be better, and we are stronger. And I always sign my books with the long defeat precedes great victory.
Yeah, that's what you did with mine. I looked at it when I first opened it up. So, yeah, no, thank you. And I think you said you'd selected three poems you'd like to share?
I have selected three poems. I mentioned McBurr's, my mentor. He passed during the pandemic, not because of COVID. A number of people passed during the pandemic, and I mentioned them in the book. I wrote poems for them in the book. None of them actually passed from COVID. But Mick was such a tremendous influence on me. My poetry became so much better while I worked with him. And this was the last poem that I shared with him. It's called Becoming, and it shares. It starts with the epigraph is his wonderful poem, Heart. It is always becoming a poem. This furnace, this fire, in a corner of the body's dark. This is the place that burns whatever has been broken. And now my poem. The world says we are the result of the residue it leaves upon us. Don't let this be. Burn this dross from me. No matter the pain it brings, I will not be like everyone else. Mold me in your image. Form me in the refiner's crucible, that my thoughts, my work, and my poetry may bring you glory. Let all the indescribable pain endured while becoming understandable bring clarity to my vision and integrity to my life. Then my words would blaze a trail across the midnight sky and be a likeness of the light which will forever shut out darkness. This next poem just came about as a result of all the different things that I was reading. I did a lot of reading. I mean, I'm a big reader anyways, but I did a lot of reading during 2020 and 2021. All I have to do is write. Hemingway was overcome by his need to be a metaphor for manhood. Sylvia Plath endured misery, depression, and Ted Hughes until she could no more. Dylan Thomas raged, debauched, and womanized until his light died. Szymborska told us about having to clean up after war. John McCrae wrote Canada's greatest poem during World War I. Joy Harjo became American Poet Laureate, describing the fallout of the war they wage on her own people. We are all at war on many fronts, some of it in the where we are, some of it unresolved battles from years gone by. Some of these wars we fight alone, others in solidarity with a found community. Sometimes it feels all is lost, but this usually precedes victory. I am blessed and honored to share my words, to be part of an ongoing dialogue, to try and make sense of the stuff of our lives. The third poem and final poem I'm going to share is the last poem that I wrote for this book. It took me about 11 months to write, 11 weeks to write this time last year. And it's a very short and simple poem. But sometimes those are the ones that become the most involved. A Matter of Faith. The epigraph is from Job chapter 6, verse 11. What strength do I have left that I should wait and hope? And what is ahead of me that I should be patient and endure? The world resumes their never-ending wars without a plan for peaceful resolution. And our city is a bastion of the entitled, who use othering as their cause and their weapon. Compared to those in the line of fire, you realize how little your problems are, even though you are overwhelmed by them. But what if the battle is being waged by forces beyond what you can see? Long-suffering is when such forces strive to kill the light and you choose to stand firm. This is the struggle to overcome despair. It requires inner strength and infinite joy and faith in the glory of the light.
Thank you so much for that, sharing those three poems, Pat.
Thank you for giving me this opportunity, Bruce. You've been so good to me over the years, but I really want to thank you for everything that you do for poetry. It's tireless. I don't know how you do it. And it really, really brings so much value to the world of letters in general.
Well, thank you for the kind words, Pat. And I do it because I love it. So that makes it, almost makes it like playing. So it's
sure. It's
all good. Anyway, thank you so much for your time and for this wonderful new collection of poems and wish you all the best.
Thank you so much. Likewise.
Okay. You have a beautiful afternoon.
You too.
Thanks so much.
You're welcome.
And you just heard my telephone interview I did with Toronto area poet Patrick Connors about his 2024 collection of poems called The Long Defeat. It was nice finally getting a chance to talk to him about his book. We'd been talking about it for at least 2 or 3 months before I ever got a chance to talk to him about it. And then it took another 2 or 3 months for me to finally get it to air. But thanks for your patience, Pat. I much appreciate it. It is 36 minutes after 5 o'clock, and for the remainder of the show, I'll be sharing some other information and even a bit of music, but I'll tell you what I need to do really is this first, so do this, and I'll be right back.
Friday evenings at 6 p.m. here on CFRC, listen to Saltwater Music, a show covering all musical genres from the East Coast of Canada. Celtic, of course, but also rock, jazz, blues, folk, and a lot more. I'm your host, Rob Carnell. Tune in to Saltwater Music Friday evening from 6 to 8 here on CFRC 101.9 FM. Or you can catch us on the web at www.cfrc.ca. And for our listeners out east, that's 7 p.m. Atlantic and 7:30 Newfoundland.
Did you recognize that sound? That's the sound of a healthy, well-cared-for cat. I truly hope you've been lucky enough to hear that sound before. The feral cat population around Kingston and the surrounding areas has grown considerably over the last few years. And thanks to organizations like Kendra's Community Kitties, these feral cats are being fed, medically cared for, spayed, neutered, flea treated, dewormed, given winter shelters, and placed in loving homes whenever possible.
Hundreds of these special animals have been rescued by Kendra, and many of these wonderful felines are purring right now, safe and healthy.
Wow. But rescuing and rehoming feral cats isn't easy. It requires an enormous amount of time and effort, and there are a few ways you can help.
You can donate to Kendra's Community Kitties on their website, kckitties.com. Even a small amount will help pay for medication, spay and neutering procedures, and food and supplies to keep these felines sheltered and healthy in the cold winters or extreme heat of the summer. Because some of these kitties are not socialized, Kendra has committed herself to provide 22 dishes of food with fresh water every day, 365 days a year, to 6 feral colonies. Food prices have increased significantly, so donations of food and money are always needed. Funding assists with the process of finding homes for these cats as well, as it takes time and money to find the right individual or family to be matched with the right kind of cat. You can become a foster family for our feline friends. Go to kckitties.com and learn how you can care for and love a cat or even a family of kittens until they can be moved into their forever homes. At the colonies, Kendra plants the seeds of trust and socializes the feral felines when she brings them food at the same time each and every single day. So they're more accepting of humans when placed with foster families. But fostering a feral cat is no easy task. Kendra cannot take these cats from the colonies unless there are foster homes willing to commit to help these kitties gain trust with humans.
You can adopt one of these special cats or kittens.
If you've already been thinking of getting a furry friend, reach out to Kendra at kckz.com and she'll provide you with all the information you need to make this important decision.
Any help you can offer Kendra's community kitties will be tremendously appreciated. Not only by Kendra, but by the lucky feral fullness series kids.
And hey, maybe, just maybe, one day you'll get to hear
Panda say I love you.
And it is 41 minutes after 5 o'clock, and thank you for tuning in to Finding a Voice here on CFRC 101.9 FM. We are located in Lower Carruthers Hall, Queen's University, Kingston, Ontario. My name is Bruce, here every Friday afternoon from 4 to 6 o'clock. We do stream live online as well at www.cfrc.ca. And I do have several minutes today, as sort of mentioned a couple of times even, but in case you missed it or just tuned in, I will be able to share a few calls for submissions that expire fairly soon, and also a few events that are coming up quite soon. And that will take up a fair portion of what's left this hour, but I also wanted to play a bit of music today since I do have a little bit of time. I happened to, and as I was choosing what to air, I happened to see just, I think it was last night or the night before, a brand new, and it was just an acoustic version of a song that I'm going to play today, and I sort of took that as a sign I should play the song, and I really love the song. I will fully introduce it after, and I'll actually tell you after I do that, is after I play the one I have that's on a CD, I'll tell you where you can find that other version of it that I heard on Facebook. Anyway, I will do that after it airs. Here you go. I hope you enjoy this song as much as I do.
If I was sure that you would let me in, I'll just save the fuel, save my time. You don't want no spacecraft flying up there tonight. Save the space suit for another flight. Call off the countdown once again tonight.
you just heard Chris and Dee. They are from Kingston, and this was off, the song's called Mars, and it was off of their 2011 album, their debut, I should say, 2011 album. I think they have four albums out now, at least three, but I think four. And the debut album is called Still Here Inside, and that has always been, although I love all of the cuts on there, that has been my favorite. The fact that I happened to see it on Facebook, as I said at the start, made me decide it was fate as I was trying to decide what I was going to play today. So anyway, if you want to catch a very just an acoustic version, just a duo. And I think they it was something they just put together in their house. It looked like they were just recording the two of them together. Some incredible harmonies in this. That's just, I think they just did this a few days ago, if not sooner. But anyway, go to Chris and D, and it's K-R-I-S and D music, and you'll see... you can listen to the new track or just a new variation of the same song, but with some incredible harmonies too. So it was really beautiful. So I'm going to let it go at that. So now what I'm going to do is I'm going to share a few calls for submissions first that are getting ready to expire. They're only good for about another week. So I should do this. And then if I get a chance, I'll, share a few calls, a few events that are coming up. The first is just the one that's every, it's a monthly thing, so you hear it here a lot. It's ARC Poetry's Award of Awesomeness, and that's ARC, A-R-C Poetry. Their deadline is always the last day of the month, open to everyone. The prize, 50% of the prize money raised, and a rare vintage award item. The link is ARC, again with a C, arcpoetry.ca /contest/ ARC Award of Awesomeness. Deadline, of course, the last day, Friday, July 31st. And then there's another one with ARC, ARC Poem of the Year Award. That is also, that deadline is Saturday, February 1st, so it's the day after. And with that, they're offering $5,000 for the winning poem and $500 for honorable mention, $250 for reader's choice selection. And it says all 10 to 12 shortlisted poems will receive paid publication in ARC and online. Again, go to ARC, again with a C, arcpoetry.ca/contest/poem of the year. Final one I'm going to bring up today is deadline is the next day, Sunday, February 2nd. It's called the Master's Review Winter Short Story Award for New Writers. Runs again through February 2nd. Is open to any writer who has not published a novel or memoir with a major press. They say they're looking for unpublished fiction or creative nonfiction, 6,000 words max. The first prize is $3,000 and publication and agency review. Second and third places, $302. Again, online publication and agency review. Go to mastersreview.com/winter-short-story-award for new writers. Again, deadline February 2nd. And you know what? I don't know if I'm going to be able to get many calls here. Let's see what we've got quickly here. I can tell you that next Friday, well, you know what? Maybe I'll just do that. Next Friday's show will feature the January and the Journey Continues open mic reading in that monthly series. And I can tell you, too, that event is coming up February 4th, first Tuesday night of the month here at the Yum Cafe. And also, there's also another first Tuesday night of the month event in Madoc with host TJ Best. They do have a Facebook page for it, so just look up First Tuesday Muse. Theirs is Tuesday, February 4th as well. 7 to 9 p.m. And I will mention there is a book signing coming up at Novel Idea Bookstore tomorrow, Saturday, noon to 3 p.m. Ross Vittori will be signing copies of his debut crime thriller, A Case Against the Clock. Watch for updates there. And with that, you are and have been listening to Finding a Voice here on CFRC 101.9 FM. We are located in Lower Carruthers Hall, Queen's University, Kingston, Ontario. My name is Bruce. It is almost 54 minutes after 5 o'clock, and if I want to share another song, I need to do this. Reminder, both hours of this show are uploaded to my personal blog space for it at Finding a Voice on cfrcfm.wordpress.com. They will remain there for 3 years. I usually get that uploaded just before 7 p.m. My thanks, heartfelt thanks to all of you for tuning in again today. And also, again, thanks to Pat Connors. It was wonderful talking to him on the phone. And it was even more wonderful hearing it again and airing it today. So thanks, Pat, and thanks for your patience in this. Also coming up at the top of the hour, 2 hours of East Coast music and a show called Saltwater Music by Rob Carnell. Should stay tuned for that. And my thanks again for tuning in. You guys have a great week to take us there. You're going to hear Fireweed. They're we're an Ontario band from the 1990s through the early 2000s. Here's a song off of, they're called Fireweed. Here's a song called Vaudeville.
Bessie cried, for the marks are back again. I have seen the kings of repertoire as they step down from the train. It's only noon, but school is done. It's a special holiday. We can all go to the Balderson to see the matinee. So, Ma, put on your crinoline. The vaudeville's back in town. Pa, get out that starch again. The vaudeville's back in town. When farmers hitched up mid-afternoon, left behind their rows to hoe, traveled miles of Mud Rut County line to the Opry's evening show. Tom and Ernie made them laugh. Bob and Joe, they played it straight. All the virtue and the villainy, that was 1898. So Bob, put on your crinoline. The vaudeville's back in town. I'll get out your starch again. The vaudeville's back in town.
Recitations, monologues, and stage stories. And tonight only,
straight from an appearance in Niagara Falls, the United States of America, Mr. Harry Houdini, master magician and escape artist. 50 cents will get you in, ladies and gentlemen, tonight only in the Boulders Theater. Don't miss it.
It's been nearly 80 years since Houdini came and went. Over 40 since the Balderson sold the show for 50 cents. Television's here to stay, vaudeville's come and gone. But we all have some traditions left we need to carry on. So mom, put on your cotton dress, the vaudeville's back in town. Dad, the television says the vaudeville's back in town. Ma, put on your crinoline, the vaudeville's back in town. Pa, get out that starch again, the vaudeville's back in town.